You are Locked On Kings, your daily podcast on the Sacramento Kings.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Friday, fun day, and getaway day for me here on the Locked On Kings podcast. This is your hub for Sacramento Kings talk, interviews, conversation. We have it all right here for you, no matter the time of the year, whether it's the dead month of August, September, where we're starting training camp here very quickly, media day next week, preseason in early October, the start of the regular season in mid-October, all the way through to April, May, June, the draft. We have it all. You don't need to go anywhere else. If you call yourself a Sacramento Kings fan, to those who are new, welcome in. You have found and made the right decision by listening to the Locked On Kings podcast. We are part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Matt George from Sports 1140 KHDK. That is the flagship radio station of the Sacramento Kings. I have the privilege of working with great names as like Grant Napier, which you heard on the podcast on Wednesday, Doug Christie, Jason Ross, the former host of this podcast, who's going to be joining me today, the G-Man Gary Gerald, who does radio play-by-play. I get to talk to them all, and I try to bring each and every single one of them every once in a while right here onto the Locked On Kings podcast. So you heard me say getaway day. I'm excited to announce that tomorrow, Saturday, I am getting married, and I'm very excited about that. A little bit nervous. I've been dealing with that all week long, if I got to be completely honest with all of you. That means, unfortunately, I got to put the podcast on the back burner for 1 week as I'm forced, poor me, to go enjoy a honeymoon in Hawaii. So what that means, it's actually going to be a great thing for you because Jason Ross is returning. Not only is he doing this podcast with me today in the interview that I'm about to play for you, he is going to be hosting a couple of episodes next week for your enjoyment. I think he's going to be doing some media day recaps as he and the rest of the KHDK team will be out there. I'm frustrated and bummed out that I will be missing that, but I will be back in time for preseason and the start of the regular season and everything like that. Again, it's just a week. I'll be going away. Hell, you guys may enjoy it and like it that you don't have to listen to me jab and blabber for a week here on this podcast network. So I hope you enjoy Jason Ross here, and I'm just going to be playing our interview here in just a second, and I really hope you enjoy him next week. Thanks to everybody who's already sent me well wishes and everything like that for the wedding. I definitely appreciate that. So sit back, relax. Please enjoy this conversation that I had with Jason Ross, and I will talk to you on the other side. He used to be the host of the Locked On Kings podcast, and then I stole it from him, Charles T. Hamilton and us. We snatched it away from the wonderful voice of Jason Ross, who really got this podcast off the ground, and we had the privilege, and I have the privilege of carrying that on. Jason, nice enough to come back and spend the time with me here on the Locked On Kings podcast, and then he's going to be taking it over for 1 week only, a one-week reunion of Jason Ross and the Locked On Kings podcast next week. I'll tell you more about that in a little bit, but Jason, welcome back. Welcome back home. Welcome back to your roots.
Thank you. I may not be giving it back. You say 1 week. You don't know.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
You're disappearing, and you never know.
So is this a power struggle that's happening right here?
I don't know. We'll have to see how it goes.
Well, the audience tends to go back to they don't like change, so they tend to go back to what they know, which is going to be you. So if we're going by popular
vote, it's been you for a while.
I don't know. I mean, with my Luka Doncic takes and my Marvin Bagley love, I might be getting pushed out the door pretty quickly here. Based off of some of the responses that I get. But I get great interaction all the time through this podcast network. And recently, a lot of the conversations that we've been having have been revolved around De'Aaron Fox and the expectations for him going forward. I had Grant on Wednesday's episode of the podcast, and he and I were discussing how important De'Aaron Fox is to the future and the growth of this team in order to be successful in the NBA. A lot of things need to happen. The Kings still feel like they're a long ways away, but step one seems to be finding that star, finding that niche, and that guy to build around. De'Aaron has embraced that, taken it upon himself. We saw flashes of his ability late in games at the end of last season. He looked fantastic in the opener of the California Classic. Simply put, October 17th, opening night against the Utah Jazz, what are you expecting and wanting to see out of De'Aaron Fox?
Almost all of those attributes that you talked about, that a guy that there's people that could become good players but that want to become, and I think he's welcoming that. So I think if he starts to get closer to that role, we saw what was the brief preview of it last year, and you brought it up, Matt, was that winning time. That's when he was his best. He might have had a quiet game, 8, 10, 12 points. Clutch time, need the game-winning basket, there he was. So those are good traits to start with. And then the other part is just to continue to get better at the unique skill set that he has. He is as fast as anybody in the league with the basketball. So, but does that always translate? You and I were at games where you'd go, wow, you'd see that moment where the arena would just pop because he was faster than anybody. Why is that once a game? Why is that once every three games? Hmm. Let's have it more in a game. Let's see it more evident, more dominant, De'Aaron Fox. So I think those are the kind of things I want to see from him to start getting to that player that people think he could be, but he has to do it more consistently.
At some point here, we're going to be discussing Dave Joerger and implementing a fast-paced system that I think everybody thinks is what the Kings need to go for, and it seems to be, based off of the picks that they made this summer, the signings that they've made, and everything going forward, that's the direction they're going. But in order to be a successful team pushing the break on transition offense, you have to have defense and get stops. You can't be taking the ball out and allow defenses to reset. And that's one area of De'Aaron Fox's game that I'm actually expecting some growth and to see. We want to see him add that outside jump shot. We want to see him improve as an overall ball handler and playmaker for his teammates, which I think will come with time. But I look at De'Aaron Fox, I see the speed, I see the craftiness and the quickness, and I think, why can't he be the kind of pest that Patrick Beverley is? Why can't De'Aaron Fox be that guy that meets you at half court as a ball handler and just frustrates you? Even dishing the ball off is going to be a struggle. What do you want to see from De'Aaron Fox or expect to see from him on the defensive end of the floor?
I love exactly what you said there about some of those things. If he could do that already, and I know you and I get a chance to work with Doug Christie, he'd want him to pick him up full court. I mean, I think he would, just to make it uncomfortable, make a guy change his direction, make him think, make him get deeper into the shot clock, even if that's not guided from the sideline. If that's De'Aaron going, I'm going to make it difficult for Russell Westbrook to bring the ball up. All right, Russell can probably run by him. That's fine, but that was, hey, that he's a pest. Get out of my way, that kind of thing. And I think De'Aaron can do that. I think he has the ability to, with long arms, with quickness, to be more of a presence defensively. And I think that's important. I agree with you. I think that's an area that would help him, help the team, and just have more of an impact on that side of the ball.
How much faith do you have in head coach Dave Joerger to change his ways a little bit? He's consistently, as an NBA head coach, has been a guy that has a roster consisting of very established veterans. He leaned a little bit too much, in my opinion, on Zach Randolph and Garrett Temple at times last season. Zebo's still here, Garrett Temple now in Memphis. How much faith do you have in him really committing to De'Aaron Fox and these young guys, pushing the tempo, doing something a little different from what we've seen, but embracing the strengths or perceived strengths of this team?
Yeah, I think he has to with Fox. I mean, that's the only speed he should be playing. The trick is, I see it in the front court because I think Willie should run. I think Marvin should run. I think Giles can run. And it's not that Zebo or Costa can't. They're slower. I mean, they're just slower. It's a fact. So I see the puzzle there, though, Matt, where if you're the head coach of the Kings in Dave Joerger, your goal probably is to win as many games as possible. It might, from the beginning, give them a better chance to win by playing Zach and Costa. I don't think that's that popular.
And not at all.
What are you trying to get? Are you trying to win five more games this year? Or are you trying to, then whatever that number is, if you play all young guys and it's low to mid-20s or high-20s or who knows? With the veterans, will they give you maybe a better chance? They might early, but what are we talking about in a year from now or 2 years from now? So that's kind of the puzzle. But is Dave Joerger the coach in 2 years? I mean, this is a little bit of a tricky spot. I think he's tended to lead towards veterans in the past. I don't entirely blame him for that, but I feel like this year's not the year to do that. And I think today, right now, I think Zach Randolph is their best post player. But what does that mean? So I think that's tricky.
I can tell you, based off of my own personal feelings, my opinions, and the interactions that I've had with Kings fans, whether it's on social media or on this very podcast, if the Kings were to roll out a starting lineup consisting of seeing Zach Randolph or Costa Kufos out there instead of Harry Giles, instead of Marvin Bagley,
it's going to be
met with boos, honestly, on opening night, I believe. And that's why a commitment to this young team at this point, based off of what we've seen from Vlade, what we've seen from this draft and this summer and the signings that they've made, Vlade's all in, and this Kings organization is seemingly all in with this core that they've put together. They're aware they don't have a draft pick next year. So in my opinion, it has to be you ride or die with this team and see what you really have and what you got at the end of the season. I'm concerned that different factions, not necessarily, well, factions might not be the right word. I'm concerned that there's different people in this front office that disagree with, we got to win as many games as we can right now versus we got to just commit to this and see what we have.
Yeah, but what would you do on that? I don't disagree with you about playing the young guys at all. What would you do with Costa and with Zach. Two good guys. I don't think they're going to be a problem. I don't think they're going to be locker room, you know, but there's Zach Randolph's had a heck of a career, scored a lot of points, a lot of rebounds. You don't owe it to him to play, but that's a difficult conversation to be like, we like you, but we're just not playing you, or do you play a certain amount of minutes? I wonder if there's a middle ground to say, we're not starting you. We do think something of you, highly of you, but we got to play these guys. And then if you help us 8, 10, 12 minutes some nights, maybe it's 20. Some nights it's zero. I don't know how they handle that one.
First off, it's a good thing I'm not a general manager in the NBA too. Because I haven't done nearly as much research as these guys need to do and don't understand all the ins and outs of it. And plus, managing player personalities is another major aspect that we sometimes treat them as names on a piece of paper and put a minutes and associate a playing time by them and don't take the human into account. Zach Randolph has played and had a successful enough career to where he believes that he should be out there playing if he's capable of playing. How I would handle Zach Randolph, simply put, is I would let him know this is what you're doing for this team right now. Last year, we leaned on you a lot as we were getting these young guys ready. Now the young guys are ready to go. We need you as a leader in a locker room, and we need you as a leader in practice. I think Zach Randolph could do wonders for Harry Giles and Marvin Bagley in terms of teaching them the strong style. Zach Randolph is very one-dimensional with one hand. Marvin Bagley seems to be pretty one-dimensional with one hand, but Zach Randolph has managed to make a dominant career out of it, or at least flashes of dominance at times. Costa Kufos, I still think, has a very open role on this team. Mm-hmm. He's someone that does a lot for you. He may not necessarily be able to run the floor, but if you partner him with a Bagley or with the Giles off the bench, depending upon what the Kings try and do, you have your big that's going to be running in one of those two, and Costa can kind of bring up the rear, and he can also be the guy getting the rebound to start the transition to begin with. Also, my hunch is that Costa Kufos is going to be the biggest piece of value you have at the trade deadline if you're trying to maybe get a first-round pick to fill that obvious gap. So, I mean, that's how I would approach everything. I still think there's a clear playing time piece established for Costa. For Zach Randolph, though, and this is me personally, and I love Zach and what he brings, I want him as far away from the floor as possible.
Yeah, and that's I get it. I think that's the trickiest one, though, for Coach, because, one, their relationship before. Sure. He's won a lot of games with Zach Randolph. And I could be wrong. Didn't he end up leading the team in scoring?
When he was in Memphis? Last year?
Last year even. And by the end, I know he wasn't playing as much, so maybe that for a while he was. He was the team leader.
I'd say three-fourths of the season.
Yeah, and so where he's different, like Vince made sense. Vince, you were near the end. He was a great leader. If he had played 10 minutes, 20 minutes tonight, great. I may not play for three games. Mm-hmm. But he was still leading coaching. Vince welcomed that. I think Temple welcomed that. I think Costa would do that. I don't know that Zach wouldn't. But I also still think it's just last year he was the leading scorer. But again, what's best for the organization? They got to figure out what Scal, Willie, Harry, and Bagley are. And that kind of gets in the way of that.
How confident are you in Bogdan Bogdanovic playing the three consistently on a nightly basis? Because it seems like that's what they've gone towards or are committing to. We'll have to wait and see.
No problem with that at all. I mean, at times last year, I think they were hesitant of that, and I would have personally played. Again, we're not coaches, but I would have played Fox, Buddy, and Bogey.
Yes.
Those are the three best. And who's the three? I don't know. One of them is, technically, but if the defensive matchup is better for Buddy at the three, then whatever. But it's one of the two. But I think Bogey is too skilled, Buddy is too skilled, and Fox is too skilled. They need to be on the floor. If Justin Jackson cracks the lineup, Shumpert's kind of the X factor. Does he get some run? Do you move Bielitsa down to three? I don't know. I think they've got some, or any of the other bigs. I think they can run out some unique lineups that has like Bagley, Giles, and Willie. All right, someone's the three. I don't know that any of them are, but so I think they've got some versatility. I don't know that I feel like they've got a starting three today, but someone's going to be it, and you know, they're going to have to just kind of plug and play.
A lot of that depends on also what the Kings do at the two spot. Buddy Hield started last season at the two, really shot himself out of ballgames, struggled at times. Jaeger brought him off the bench for the remainder of the season, and towards the middle to the end part of the season was when he was at his best, was shooting at a high clip from three-point range, which is what you want to see him do. I would love to see how good of a shooter he can be in transition offense situations, standing in the corner at the wing with Fox or interplayer here attacking the basket for a kickout. Does Buddy Hield to you have to be a starter at this point if he's going to take that next step, or do you still think there's a lot of value in him being that sixth man off the bench?
Yeah, I've constantly said that. Like, to me, in my mind, I see Buddy Hield as a sixth man on an awesome team. Like, if that team, and maybe even be the leading scorer, I'd love to see him in the Manu Ginobili, Jason Terry, Jamal Crawford, Bobby Jackson, another sixth man. Like, Bobby was great. Could have started, probably should have started, came off the bench, filled a role. Awesome. But the more I think about it, I think Buddy's ready to have a massive year. I think his limitations were his ball handling. That, I've heard he's worked on. I don't know if it's polished. He was a good rebounder for his size, decent playmaker, but a gifted shooter. And I think he's going to have a big, big year. Ideally, I think it's off the bench, but if he's the starting two and leads the team in scoring, it, I don't know if it's crazy to get him to 17, 18. That's a pretty good jump, 19 even. He's capable of that, and I really think Buddy's going to have a big year.
You know, we put a lot of stock in who the guys are being announced for the starting lineups mm-hmm. on a nightly basis, but ultimately what really matters is who's on the floor at the end. And like you said, I don't think there's any situation, barring injury, to where Jaeger can get away with rolling out a combination or any combination that's different from Buddy, Fox, and Bogey to close out games. That's clearly your three best at those three positions. We saw a lot from Justin Jackson in Summer League. You were actually in Vegas, so you got to watch him in person a little bit. I talked to James Hamm about this, and one of the things James said was, yes, we saw the scoring, which we actually saw in Summer League from him last year as well, but he's concerned that we didn't see anything else. Justin can score, but he doesn't rebound. He doesn't pass. He really is just very one-dimensional. I like that in bursts at times off the bench, but if you're asking me how much faith I have in Justin Jackson at the three as a starter, it would be little to none. Where are you at with Justin Jackson getting big minutes?
He showed more to me in Summer League than I thought, because I was not that impressed with his rookie season. I thought there were too many times I'd see a box score at the end of the night and went, wow, he played 33 minutes? I would have guessed like 12. I just didn't see anything. There was nothing memorable about his games. He had 5 points. Okay. Nothing stood out.
Yeah.
And like you said, Matt, there no other stats. I mean, it wasn't like there were 9 boards and 4 assists and 2 steals. It was kind of an empty stat line. But I remember he had a rough first California Classic game, and then the rest of the summer was actually really good. So I like the fact that he scored. I don't know. I still want more from him, but I think I moved him up a notch or two in my at least opinion of him. But again, it's all about the consistency, and I don't know that he's on the floor at the end of games for this team.
We've had a lot of fun this summer discussing and gotten a lot of different opinions on what a successful season looks like for the Kings, what fans want. You could also always associate a win total to it. I think we can all agree that a shot at the playoffs is not impossible. We've seen stranger things in professional sports, but it's certainly unlikely. Grant on Wednesday said that if we can't by April, look at this team and say, okay, I can see the established core. Now we're just one, maybe free agency piece away from competing for that 8th or 7th or 6th seed. That's how he would classify this season as a success. What are you looking forward to or looking for where we can look back in April and May and say, okay, this happened, so it was a good year?
Yeah, I like that thought that Grant has. Here's how I've put it on the show before, on our show, is comparing him to the Lakers of last year. And the Lakers of last year, I think we could all look at them and go, wow, they've got something going. And they didn't make the playoffs. They weren't really that close, but they separated themselves from the rest of the group, the Kings, the Suns, the Mavs, everyone that was at the bottom. The Lakers were in that kind of isolated tier where they were certainly below the 8 seed. But we all looked at them and go, wow, ball looks pretty good, and Randall's getting better, and Ingram, like just Hart, all the pieces. We went, I see it. They're better. There's an identity. They were an up-tempo team. So there was something that was created. Okay, now what do they add in free agency? Well, they added the best player in the league, LeBron James. They're a little different look now. But I don't know that the Kings would get a LeBron James.
Yeah.
But I think the point is kind of similar to Grant's, that at the end of this season, there can't, because I don't know that today you and I probably would have a hunch who we think the young core is, but we might look at that in January and go, ooh, I was off on that one and that one. I think we need to know in April where we go, yep, Fox going forward with Buddy, Bogey, Bagley, and Giles. Great, that's the group. Or whatever that answer is, has to be pretty close to crystal clear. Or how about Willie, for example? I'm a big fan of Willie. I feel like I'm kind of isolated on that one. They got a big decision on him.
I'm too.
So it's a free agent year. I anticipate him having a good year, but that's a big financial investment. They need to know at some point going, oh, no, we're definitely renewing Willie Cauley-Stein, or no, we are done with Willie. I mean, that's a big financial decision that I'm guessing if they're a fan of his, he's going to get a nice contract. So those kind of questions need to be answered. I don't anticipate the playoffs. I think it's going to be a tough year, though I think it's going to be a fun year. I like what they have. And so I don't have an optimistic look at a win total, but I think if they get closer to what the Lakers were, there would have to be an improvement in wins. I think I can't imagine it being, well, they're more likable, they got a better identity, it's a fun team and they won 22 games. Like, I don't think that would all work. I think it would have to be in the higher 20s to low 30s if that gets to what I hope it to be.
You know me, Jason. I'm team optimist. I'm looking at this team and I think they can break the 30-win threshold. I'm looking at the line that Vegas put and I would take the over in a heartbeat. And I agree 100% with you. I think this is going to be a fun team as long as they play to their perceived strengths, which is in transition. I think we have opportunities to see a team. One of my definitions of success this year was seeing a team that competes on a nightly basis but just doesn't close games out. Like, if you can close out every once in a while, that's great. Like we saw with the Kings being able to close out the Warriors on the road or the Cavaliers at home. Stuff like that is great, and those are good building blocks. But ultimately, I expect a young team to be competitive for, let's say, 40 minutes in the final eight. Mm-hmm. The best team turns it on, and the Kings just can't compete, and they fall apart, and they end up losing by 5, 6, 7 points. That's what I'm wanting to see on a nightly basis. I'm in the minority here, especially in Sacramento. I love LeBron James going to the Lakers. I love when the Lakers are good because I think it's fantastic for the NBA, and not only that, I think it's fantastic for Sacramento because when the Lakers come to town, it's always a great atmosphere.
Yes.
So now, four times this season, we are going to have the stacked Golden State Warriors with DeMarcus Cousins, and we are going to have the LeBron James-led Los Angeles Lakers here in Sacramento, which means great fan atmosphere and also young teams, but especially the Sacramento Kings over this entire drought, tend to rise to the occasions in those matchups. How they play in those 48-minute stretches at home, I think, is going to be a big eye-opener for how good this team is and can be in the future.
Yeah, and I think, if I remember right, all four of those home games are actually relatively early. I think they're done by, like, mid-January with those four teams, with the Warriors and Lakers here. But those are still, you know, you've been there. It just, those are the best games of the year. They're fun. There'll be a lot of Laker fans. There'll be a lot of Warrior fans.
I like it.
Yeah, and then it brings out the best in the Kings fans, too, and the Kings. So I wish they played them 10 times each, to be honest.
Yeah. Last thing for you here, and thank you so much for taking the time. The Sacramento Kings are currently the team with the longest playoff drought in the NBA. The Timberwolves passed that down to Sacramento, but they're dealing with a lot of chaos going on there right now with Jimmy Butler demanding a trade, wanting out. He has labeled three major destinations that he wants to go to. Not that that matters, because ultimately the Wolves are still in control. But he picked two New York teams, and the Brooklyn Nets and the New York Knicks, and then he picked the LA Clippers, which seems to be his ideal landing spot, which surprises me a little bit. I don't think anybody expected him to be interested in the Kings or the Kings to have anything relatively of value to offer the Wolves to get him to come here. Not that that would make any sense. Anyway, but I'm hearing rumblings of, and I like the idea of the Kings being involved as that potential third team to help out, whether they take a bad contract and get a draft pick that they're missing, or find a way to get an Andrew Wiggins. I mean, that's a major get, or a Tobias Harris if the Clippers are involved. How active would you like to see the Kings be in those trade scenarios, or would you rather than just sit back and say, this is what we have, we're going into the year with this group, and then we'll get fun and freaky with it in the middle of the year?
Yeah, I feel like, agree or disagree with the plan, I feel like they kind of have a plan. Like they're building with the young guys. They've really stripped it. I mean, it started once they traded DeMarcus. They went for it. We can debate that till the end, whether it was the right move or the wrong move, but they stripped it. They started new. They started fresh, and they're still in the early stages of that. So I wouldn't want to see them cripple that in any way, but if you get better, you want to get better. And for the longest time, I know people have been hung up on not having the draft pick next year. And for, I don't know, 2 years, I've been saying, why are you so hung up on that? They got time. Well, now that time is shrinking a little bit. I'd like them to have a draft pick. If they don't, a first-round pick. If they don't, it's not the end of the world, but this is probably an avenue that they could, or another trade that they could get involved in to maybe get there. So I'd be anxious anyway to the team to get better. I don't want to see them mortgage anything too foolishly, but I don't know what that is. I mean, I don't know that anybody on this team should be off limits, but let's be smart about it, right? I mean, and again, without knowing what a potential deal is, I don't know what that is, but I would not want this team to be on the wrong end of a trade again.
Well, Jay Ross, I am off next week on honeymoon, which means you are going to be doing... Yeah, I know. Some girl said yes to me, believe it or not.
No, not that, but I mean, come on. Where's the commitment to the podcast?
I know. Well, I mean, I had to pick one to leave at the altar, and I got to leave the podcast just for a week. I promised them I'd come back. I mean, they're my firm number two.
Yeah, okay.
I promise I will come back. I'm not a lonely lover. but you are going to be taking over, so it's going to be good to have you back for next week. I'm sure fans are going to have fun with that. Thank you for doing it. I hope you you do enjoy it. Thank you, of course, for building it into what it is today that I could take over. And I'm looking forward to listening and having the listeners have you back for one more week next week.
You better not listen. You just enjoy your honeymoon, get away, escape. I will tell you, when I was on my honeymoon, I don't know why this came up, but I just thought of it when you said that. The Kings traded Jason Williams for Mike Bibby. I was on my honeymoon. Yeah, I mean, at the time, it was just like, I remember when I left, like, okay, like, season's over, nothing's going to happen, and then, whoa, that was a pretty big deal.
Well, I'm a jealous lover, too, and yeah. I'm already missing Kings Media Day, which sucks. So if some bomb drops, I better have service in Hawaii to at least see it.
Yeah.
And then I'll be munching or chomping at the bit to talk about it the following week.
But you're coming back for the first preseason game. You'll be back in time.
Absolutely. Yeah. I will be back in time. But until then, listeners, you get Jay Ross, so I hope you enjoy that, Jay. Thank you for... they would never boo. If anybody boos you, they need to boo themselves and look in the mirror. But that is Jason Ross joining me today. He will be back next week. Jason, thank you for taking the time.
Thank you.
Jason is fantastic as always. I know you are going to enjoy having him with you next week as he recaps Media Day and shares all of his comings and goings there from the Kings practice facility. Should be a fun training camp that we're about to head into with the position battles that are going to be having for backup point guard between Yogi Ferrell and Frank Mason. You also talk about who's going to be playing the three spot consistently. Is it going to be Bogdan Bogdanovic? Where is Buddy Hield going to fit into things? Are the Kings really going to be a run and gun team? How does Zach Randolph and Kosta Kufos fit in, like Jason and I discussed? There's a lot to pay attention to here over this next month. Pretty soon it'll be preseason, and I'll be back and we'll have all the fun for all that. So enjoy Jay Ross next week. I can't wait to come back and share all of my experiences with you. Like he said, something might drop. If some big bomb drops, it's going to be just my luck that I'm out of Hawaii, and I can't discuss it and react to it immediately with all of you. But I look forward to having Jason here on the podcast, just like old times. He'll be able to spice up the quality a little bit, bring it up from the rookiness of everything that I roll out. I'm certainly looking forward to it. But thank you guys for listening into this week's podcast. Enjoy Jason next week. I will speak to you in a couple of weeks. You are listening to the Locked On Kings podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
You are Locked On Kings, your daily Sacramento Kings podcast,
part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.